नमोतस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमोतस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमोतस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स बुद्धं नमांसाहं नमस्सामि। So it's a privilege to be here and feel just how strength of your community to see so many folks on a Monday night. It's quite something, so very heartening. And they'd asked me for a topic for tonight. So back many months ago, must have been in February, I said, oh, what about the Buddha is my profound refuge? And then about a few months ago, they said, well, what is your talk about? So I sent in a kind of sense of the direction we might go in. But there's a trick in our style is you don't prepare anything. So you start out and you find where you end up. So there's a trick talking and there's a trick in listening, because it isn't shaped in the way you may be used to. You know, if you're used to something more formally prepared. So there's nothing I will say you do not know. So to listen, just back a bit. Resting back, letting my voice come to you. Yeah? So we listen from this place it's not trying to take and hold anything. It's letting whatever comes strike, and maybe it resonates with something for you, maybe it doesn't. So let us see where we go. And so maybe we start with the title. The Buddha is my profound refuge. So what does it mean for us?
Yeah.
Some of you are Buddhists, some aren't. There's a whole mix here. So what is this talking about? Hopefully we know what refuge means, that quality of shelter, that there is something, a place, an experience, a possibility of coming out of the wind, coming out of the storm, and into a place of safety.
Yeah.
I'm sure you all were very grateful for that possibility the other night. Yeah. No, so it's the same thing, but for the heart, where we have a place of protection, where we're okay. And what does this sense of Buddha in this mean? And there is the historical Buddha from which we've inherited a whole path of practice, a path of waking up, coming out of the storm. And for Buddhists, there can be a tremendous sense of joy in that there is a person that had this very fragile human form, saw that it was subject to sickness and aging, and started to investigate, was there a possibility of being freed up out of that? Yes, so we can have a sense of connection to that search was made, and a sense that one of the first things the Buddha said when he'd recognized this freedom was that he was teaching out of compassion, so that we've inherited something that was offered out of compassion and is for our well-being. Yeah. And it's what I've found in my experience is it's very lovely, because this possibility that the Buddha points to, isn't about adhering to some particular doctrine. It's about having had a path, a way of investigating, pointed out, that we start to know directly for ourselves. Yeah. So when I was in England, all kinds of people came to practice at the monastery. One of my friends was in a full habit with a great big cross, and she would be doing the pujas and really using the teaching within her own religious understanding, to examine how she got caught, what made her life difficult. Yeah. So I offer my reflections in that sense, that whatever way your spiritual practice is inclined, that this teaching was offered as a possibility, as a way of inquiring inwards and seeing how we get the kind of storms of our mind and heart going and how to find refuge. Yeah. So a very profound internal inquiry. And if it was just all in here about me, most of us wouldn't bother, because we are living in a context of relationship. So the really astounding aspect of this is when we really understand how we get caught, how we do suffering, how we behave in ways that are foolish and unhelpful. When we understand that and we can really meet what happens in our hearts, then we're more capable of living a life that is of compassion and service. Yeah. So it has a inner cultivation and an outward manifestation. I've just been down at Cloud Mountain, which some of you know. We've been having a retreat, and what was something coming to my mind a lot down there was just that here we are having come into manifestation, with these bodies and a whole world we're living in, and how do we relate to that? What do we bring to that experience? And I have reflected a lot about what the Buddha said, how he related to the world, and that his relationship was one of compassion, of a generous heart doing what he could. So I find it a helpful thing to contemplate. When I wake up in the morning, how do I frame my day? What's my day about? And what I find is very freeing is to have the sense of living my life as a blessing, that to be acting in the way I can in the world that is most ethical, kindly and generous. Yeah. It feels very different than when I've just kind of got up and got going. So what happens for me is it connects me to this inner freedom, this refuge place. Yeah. And how much easier life is when we have this reference. So, putta, it also can be reflected on as this ability of the mind to know the way things are, yeah? And how much a shelter that is when we can just be here, available with whatever is happening. Yeah. We stop running, we stop hiding, we stop ignoring, we stop trying to not have it that way, and we're just willing to be present. Yes. Feeling it. And the miracle of this is when we're really just here, available with whatever is happening, we come out of the reactivity of the mind and responsiveness happens. We are no longer looking through all the kind of fetters of our not wanting this, wanting that, you know, the whole snake's nest really, and we can see what might be needed for ourselves, the other. Yeah. So the teaching has this possibility to it. That we can look after the world, the inner world, the outer world. Yeah, so how do we get caught? On the brief thing I wrote, yeah, it said about I read it this morning, like the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, that sense of refuge. And many, many years ago, I went to India and went to Bodh Gaya for the full moon of Vaisakha Puja. So the day, which is generally the day the birth, enlightenment, and death of the Buddha is celebrated. And you know, I was young and particularly zealous and came from a tradition where on full moons you sit up all night in meditation. So I presumed everybody would be sitting up all night in meditation, but there was nothing scheduled. So I asked the monk in charge of the temple grounds what was happening, and no, it wasn't planned, nothing was planned. In fact, they locked the temple gates. But he gave me permission to spend the night in the Mahabodhi temple grounds under the Bodhi tree. So you can imagine how exhilarating that felt. Yeah. So there I was, hot season, flies, mosquitoes, all of it. Yeah. And I thought, oh, the Buddha had the host of Mara. Yeah. I start to get a sense of it. You know? It wasn't just comfortable. And that whole, yeah, just being there. But the bit that was most difficult about the night was I'd get up to circumambulate the temple grounds. The temple, not the whole grounds, but the temple and the Bodhi tree. And whenever I got up to circumambulate, four men got up with big sticks and followed me. And I'd be circumambulating and I'd hear clop, 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 coming behind me like this. And I'd go round and at a certain point I'd be so frightened I'd have to go and sit down under the tree again. So this played itself out all night. So that was my experience on Vaisakh under the Bodhi tree, on the full moon when the Buddha got enlightened. I'm there frightened, actually, on some levels. You know, someone had been killed very violently the week before on the grounds, so it wasn't like it was exactly a safe place. So, yeah, and years later, something happened and I thought about this experience and I realized what was going on. The head monk of the temple had put these four men there to protect me. And wherever I went, they came thop, 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 thop after me. Yeah? And just how we can miss what is really going on from our fear, from our expectation. Imagine what it would have felt like if I'd sat there knowing this man, this monk, had got four men to protect me with big sticks so I was safe. To have felt myself safe in this place of refuge under the Bodhi tree. Yeah, rather than in this place where the mind was occluded. I had some lovely moments, but it missed what was really going on. And it sounds extreme, but we can be doing this all the time. Yeah. We have ideas about what we think is happening, and we're missing what's really going on. So the encouragement of the Buddha's teaching is to really see the ways our mind, through its desire, its ill will, you know, its sheer delusion, is missing the truth and creating distress for ourselves. Can we put it all down? Yeah. It's an activity. Can we stop it? Can we just be here in the beauty of the present moment? This actual refuge with this waking up heart that has this possibility of being completely present, available, imbued with qualities of compassion, generosity, kindness, equanimity, joy. Yeah? This is our inheritance from the Buddha, possible in any moment. Yeah? And moments we can do it, and then other moments we're kind of in the storm. And yeah, and then when the storm is really raging, to remember there is a place of refuge. It's in being fully here and now. Feeling our capacity to know. Buddho, awake. Yeah. Out of contention. Nothing we need to push away, nothing we need to hold on to. Feel the freedom of that. For myself, I've taken a phrase even like that, that comes from the text we were using this week, and just explored what would it feel like if I really had let my heart know it. Yeah. Nothing I need to hold on to, nothing I need to push away. Yeah. So this is what the Buddha has pointed to. Unfortunately, in the same text he says he can't knock any of us on the head and wake us up. Yeah? It's something we have to take full responsibility for ourselves. Each of us, individually. And it is knowable here and now. So yes, just this coming out of the storm. And there's ways we can get in touch with this. One of my things I seem to be saying a lot is just this quality of softening. Coming out of the kind of edginess of the mind. Edginess of me here, you there. Just softening the heart. Feeling our connectedness. Feeling how things are moving, changing, relative. They're not hard and fixed and certain. Softening it. It's uncertain. My ideas about someone. Completely uncertain. We don't know. My senses of what tomorrow holds. Maybe a broad shape, but what will actually happen? It's completely mysterious. So to be able to use this anicca, the uncertainty of this world, to once again soften and come into a place of refuge. And this is what I mean by, for me, the Buddha is my profound refuge. I have no other refuge. So in our tradition, we chant this all the time. Just that sense, whatever you make of that Buddha, your own heart, your waking up heart. So maybe enough, because I'm new to you all, and it might be better to be talking in response to each other rather than me just sitting here speaking. And so I hope it's helpful what I said. So if there's anything anyone wanted to talk about in terms of this waking up practice of ours. Pretty quiet. One of the dangers about someone from where I come from, if you don't ask me, I ask you. You don't have to be polite. Yes. So, correct me if I'm phrasing wrongly, just for folk who can't hear, just a question of how difficult it can be to know how long to be waiting in terms of the need to act, and the kind of tension between the listening and the need to act. In terms of finding out what's actually happening rather than assuming. Yes, so how long do we wait to get true information, so to speak? Yeah? And I guess one of my responses would be that the work is here, so that what occludes is worry, sadness, a bit of anger, resentment, these kind of qualities mean we can't see very clearly. So I guess for my own part, it's to try and meet that experience here. Yeah. Sometimes it only takes that long. You know, when we actually recognize, oh, that makes me really sad. Yeah. It makes me really sad what's happening. And then when we've met that, then we have more freedom in our response. Yeah. Yeah. But the Buddha did say, patient endurance is the supreme practice for burning up. Yeah. So there is a quality of needing to bear with some things. No. And it's tricky because we don't want to be going into a position where we're not acting suitably. You know, we've left it so long, the train's now down in Portland, you know. So it's about developing through meditation and life practice, the skill to be able to become fully available. You know, you get more skilled at it, yeah? That get more capacity for it, yeah? But it's a, you know, it's a question I think we all have to keep examining. What does it take, actually, you know, to really know what's going on here? And most of the time, we won't have all the information anyway. So then if we're acting from a good-heartedness, the best of intention, that's, the Buddha would say, is it gives us a place of strength, even if things go a bit messy, yeah? Because we're not all-knowing, all-seeing, much as we would wish to be. Yeah, it's painful. Yeah. I saw someone over to my... Yes. Yep.
And I find that giving metaphors can be a fun and helpful way that someone can grasp the essence of something new.
Absolutely.
So I was wondering if you could offer us some metaphors which capture the essence of this work, which is fun and motivation.
Well, I'm trying to think of some of the, I mean, even refuge and shelter is a metaphor. Some metaphors are like crossing the ocean, getting to the other shore where it's safe. Yeah. It's tricky with metaphors because there is both a path that is cultivated, so it seems to be time-bound, and the actual awakeness is immediate here and now. So metaphors that are about time are a bit tricky. But the Buddha talked of a cave as a metaphor. Anybody got a good metaphor? Yeah, because it's helpful. Ways they That's not coming to my mind straight off. Wednesday, yes. Yes. Yeah. Takes time. Yes, yes. Just careful with your words. Yeah? But, all right, a similar metaphor Lumpur Cha would use is about growing trees. You know, the sense that actually it does grow, and he would say, well, don't keep pulling it up, you know, and planting it somewhere else. So a sense of, you know, actually stabilizing and cultivating, you know, without constantly disrupting the process. Yeah? I'll think about it. It's a good question. There'll be hundreds of them, but they're just not springing to mind. Yeah. 'Cause metaphors do help. Yes. Yes.
Well, in way we're talking a lot about responding.
Yes.
And how it is. But I feel like I just respond. I don't kind of like capture.
Sorry, you don't.
I feel like I'm very good responding. Yeah. I'm not such a good carver if I
capture.
And I feel confusion around that. Like,
so not enough direction, you mean?
Yeah. But you know, I'm responding to this person's needs and this person, you know, and sometimes I mean, but...
Sometimes?
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe not enough, eh?
Maybe not enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds, from what you're describing, I think, well, you know, maybe not enough. In the terms of the need we have for reflective spaces, yeah? Because otherwise we come out of response into reaction.
Well, not reactive.
Yeah, not reactive. Yes.
But is that it? Is that all? I mean, do we need to be, I want to do a great piece of art.
Yes.
And I just don't know how to engage with it, and that practice
work
in a way that I'm prepared to move on to.
You're prepared to?
Prepared to move forward.
Yeah.
And it just kind of leaves me wondering, what's most important here, you know? Am I missing the earthly life, you know, that is
Yeah. It's a yeah. It's the existential question, isn't it? Why are we here? What's it all about? These are the hardest questions in a way. The way I've reflected on it myself, and in a way it's each of our journey with it, because we've each been given this incarnation, and it's time bound, so in that way very precious. And it's a really tricky thing, but we know from our experience, when we start to cultivate the qualities of kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity, the world starts to look very different. When the heart, even if we're generous, there can be still a kind of occlusion where we're not actually able to directly touch the beauty or the goodness of others or our own. And the practice is to really fully develop the heart. And my sense of that is then there's just a natural movement to want to bless it, because the world's, my life is not actually about me in the same way. When our lives are more turbulent, it can be easier to see where we're going in some ways, because then we know what the work is. That where we need to be seeing the ignorance, the ways we've got caught. When it gets where we've got to a level where mostly we're fine, it does get trickier. Because that big, we're not hearing the whip cracking in quite the same way. So the imperative that got us onto the path, started the search, it can be hard to connect to that in the same way. The very raw experience of dukkha and unsatisfactoriness that we wanted to understand and free ourselves up from. But that existential pain is part of dukkha. And it's a very particular agonizing kind of pain, if you ask me. I guess for me, because there'll be moments where that can really strike savagely, to come into the heart and find out what the desire is. What was I wanting? Does that make sense? But it's a subtle inquiry, because things have got so, it's not like we're being thrown this way and thrown that way, and it's kind of, the mind's got more stable. So it's a kind of finer inquiry. It's It's a kind of new frontier in a way. Yeah. Yeah. I find at that point reading the texts is very helpful. That's right, I would think so. It's a bit like nourishment is needed.
I'd be curious to hear a little bit of sharing about your experience at Buddha's Refuge from the perspective of being a nun for 20 years to experiencing life in Pennsylvania. Is there a different quality to the way that the two containers take the way that you experience life and the path in those two containers, or is that really not really a relevant distinction?
I think it's a very relevant distinction. Yes, so asking about the experience of refuge as a nun within the monastic form and then in lay practice, and just, you know, the different, my different experiences of that. And I don't know if you know what it means within the tradition I come out of to be a nun, but it's, you know, we, in our community, we lived, you know, some nuns, some of my friends were nuns, Tibetan nuns are still working, but we lived not going out to work, not driving, not cooking, not handling money, you know, a very disciplined life in terms of what we could do or couldn't do. In a sense, a very great simplification. Now, as a senior nun, there were still finance committees and board meetings and going here, going there. So there was a lot of activity. You know, people could be knocking on the door at 4 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. So it wasn't that there wasn't a lot to do. For me, the qualitative difference was, is in the monastic community, and when I'd come out to places like this, everybody I met was cultivating ethics. Yeah? Everybody I met was interested in cultivating their heart. My conversations were with folk for whom, you know, even if from different religious traditions, but a sense of spiritual inquiry was central. And I lived in the forest. Yeah? So when I left Chithurst, I went via a kind of month watching the ocean. I went to ended up living in Melbourne, so I'm now in the city, and I'm in a city of about 4 million people, rushing on the motorways, and I'm also now rushing on the motorways, you know, on an hour and a half commute to work, an hour and a half back. Well, you know what it's like, and so there were significant differences for me, you know. I've not said to anyone, but when, for me, in the morning, my body would go into this kind of before I get into the car, was really extreme. Just the impact of the motorway. Yeah? So, let alone the intensity of the work, which, like most of your workplaces, was under-resourced. I could have been there 24 hours a day and the work would not be finished. Yeah. So that experience of being in a place where, luckily, my colleagues at work were extraordinary. You know, I worked in a palliative team, so any of you who've done that kind of work No, you're working with extraordinary people. Yeah. But all around me, there were all kinds of things going on. So it was hard, I found, to be out of an ethical container where everybody was interested in spiritual cultivation. And that's the blessing of community, and that's the blessing of times in retreat, where we can just deeply relax. Everybody has the same basic understanding. So in terms of the sense of refuge, it was always the same in the sense of, well, it's to know what's going on. But of course, what's going on is going on a lot faster. So the attention had to be much broader rather than the refined attention possible within more contained spaces. And as I said, in my talk earlier, it was so clear to me. The Buddha said his mind dwelt in two conditions. One was an emptiness, and when it came in contact with the world, it was on compassion. And in that transition into full-on lay life with study and the whole thing going on, it was so clear that I needed to really cultivate the Brahma-vihara. And that was how I had to meet manifestation. If I'd been in any doubt before, my doubt was removed. Yeah? It was the place where the mind could stay upright. It knew what it was doing. Yeah? Whatever it came into contact with, it was coming with a sense of welcomeness and friendliness and would be softening. Yeah. So it was a bit like the dial was turned up a bit in some ways. In other ways, there was a great dropping of another kind of intensity. Yeah. But having to be clear in meeting the day, because the days could be really chaotic. And I felt for you all. As a nun, I thought, oh dear, I could see, because people would come and talk to me all the time about how stressful their lives were. But then to be back in that stress, of studying and working and trying to keep wholesome food on the table and house cleaned and the whole just how complex our lives can be and how fragmented we can feel. So working to come out of fragmentation by using this quality of compassion, so that whatever was arising, there was the same experience meeting it, in a way. The heart was present for it. So it's work in progress, of course. But yeah. Does that answer what you'd...
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Lisa? Hi.
So, just having come off of retreat with you these past several days, I'm now returning to that rush of life, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about the relationship that you see between this compassion with which you've been meeting that rush, and the cultivation of awareness when things are going by so
well. Yeah. So the question, just in case people couldn't hear it, about cultivating the compassion, yeah, that we meet experience with, and awareness, you know, because stuff is rushing past so quickly. Yeah. So to me, awareness, compassion, I mean, compassion is the quality that the intention has, the attending intention. You know, these things that are coming out of the very heart. Yeah. And to have a reference to something, like I call it Buddha, but awareness, something that can simply know experience, that isn't experience. Yeah? This gives us a space, so we're not just completely overrun by what is going on. No? We can know, no? There is confusion or impact, or not even from a self position, but just as what is being experienced by the mind. Yeah? And the compassion really has to start here, doesn't it? For what it feels like to have such a lot impacting. Yeah? And that softening with what it's like to be alive in a sensitive form. Yeah. Mm. Let me take care with what is rushing. Mm. Yeah, so I've been rushing around the planet, and with a sense of, well, at the airports, you know, that I'm hopping through, to be careful with what I'm taking in. You know, that when we don't need to be putting a lot of stuff through our minds, we just don't. Yeah, there's enough that we just need to attend to. Yeah. So it's talked about guarding the sense doors in terms of the amount of impact in the world, you know? So that we're not too flooded. Makes sense? Yeah, yeah. And in our workplaces, we often have very little control. But we can be careful about what perceptions we add to what we take in. Yeah? So we're not spinning, and we're not proliferating. When we're walking from one room to the other, we're just walking. So we wherever we can, we keep grounding the tendency of the mind to be making stories. Yeah? Because that is very tiring. Yeah? So that's how we look after ourselves. A lot is impacting, but let's not add to it. Yeah? Takes a kind of discipline. And that's why I think the quality of compassion is, and friendliness for ourselves, is essential, because none of this can we do from aversion or a good idea. It has to come from this deep place of looking after ourselves. Yeah. Like we meditate from that place, we live from that place. As an idea, all this stuff is dreadful. We shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that. Sounds dreadful, doesn't it? Hard enough already. Great.
I really resonated with the comments that the woman spoke about the existential crisis. And you suggested reading the text, and I was wondering if you could give some sense of that.
Yeah. Well, that was the sense of, it's about keeping connected with our faith. Yeah. And in my experience, and you may find it different, but some of the original texts are so beautiful. It's like drinking in ambrosia. Yeah. And when we're feeling in a kind of existential place, we need some really nourishing medicine. So I don't know you well enough at all to really recommend a text, but are you Buddhist in your practice?
Yeah.
Yeah? So even things like The Life of the Buddha by Yanomoli. Yanomoli, The Life of the Buddha. You know, that's a very standard old text. You know, anyone who knows me knows I love the Sutta Nipata. Yeah? And my favorite book in the whole world is the Majjhima, the middle length discourses. Yeah? And, you know, with Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. So some of it we have to be careful about because it's taught to the monastic community, but there is such beautiful teachings in there. Yeah, you know, just that, yeah, that sense of coming into a real place of tenderness with that existential question about meaning. What is the meaning of our lives? And I remember having had a few, reading this thing from Indian philosopher, and I've lost his name, and he said, and it kind of made me stop, is that it's our ceaseless questioning of life that is where our pain comes from. Okay? So I would also just explore a bit about that. You know, just feel here. What is the mind state connected with it? And it may be there's a particular time, and I feel it for myself now, when we actually need to be serving the community. Otherwise, it just doesn't quite make sense. I don't know what you'd make of that, but it's a bit like we've been given so much. And there is a certain point where you have to start giving it away. Yeah, I don't know if that's helpful, but yeah. No, I can see your life's a blessing. Yeah.